seen anything like that?
I'm a very confident front runner for Caddy for 33 years, 145 wins now, and that's the best win I've ever had.
I have no idea what you have.
I don't know. How are we going to count all the shots? I can't keep track.
Fuck! God damn it.
I don't think he's pleased.
Of course he would. That's a particularly stupid question. It's the Irish Open. Of course you want to play at the weekend.
Hello, Golf Weekly friends. You're very welcome along. We're coming to you in podcast form and also live on Facebook, also known, Fionn, as Facebook Live.
Wow. I would have combed my hair.
You're very welcome to the studio.
Thank you.
Nathan Murphy here
more
as ever.
More people watch on YouTube, Joe. But is that right? If you're still with Facebook, that maybe says more about you.
Yeah, I'm not with Facebook at all. Right. Got out of there recently.
Neither am I.
You're very welcome. So this is a new departure for us. We're going to stream the show live most Thursdays now, every Thursday, 1 o'clock, give or take.
You're very much Facebook's target market, though, now, aren't you?
Who, me? Plus 50?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're the only one still hanging around, keeping an eye.
Look what the kids are doing.
Yeah. Keeping in touch with all your old friends.
Oh, my God.
This is both a season review and also a season preview. The Greenbrier Classic is on this week. It's the big one. The Solheim Cup as well.
It was a solid 6 minutes between the end of last season and the beginning of this one.
It does feel that way. Mm. Exciting news, we have a sponsor. We have new best friends of the pod, Nathan. Best friends.
Very best friends.
Golf Weekly, I can now happily tell you, is brought to you by La Cala, which is Spain's largest golf resort. It's Irish-owned, FBD Hotels and Resorts. And La Cala is located near Mijas. It houses a state-of-the-art spa, 107-bedroom hotel as well. We're very happy they're on board. A wonderful place to go and visit. You'd
Amazing.
Be mad not to.
Yeah. And, well, I'm going to Spain for New Year's, I think.
Well, if you don't go to La Cala,
yeah,
you're kidding yourself.
Yeah. Laura and I, we decided we're going to go spend New Year's in Spain.
In Mijas. I've been to Mijas.
Same.
Lovely spot.
Lovely spot, Mijas.
Well, then we're going to go to Mijas.
You're saying Mijas, as in Mijas.
How do you spell it?
M-I-J-A-S.
Mijas, yeah.
Yeah, Mijas.
Yeah.
Mijas. I was at a wedding there recently.
What are you saying Mijas for?
No, it's not Mijas, it's Mijas.
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 Like with a H, Mijas.
Okay.
La Cala in Mijas, owned by FBD, Irish owned. We'll try and get out there and golf at some stage. But it's great for us. It's a big day for the podcast. We've got a sponsor.
That's great.
It's good.
It means we're going live. People can give us live interaction.
Yes.
They no longer have to send a tweet. Maybe wait 3 weeks till we answer the tweet. They can just get the answer right there and then.
That's a good point. Facebook Live comments.
Exactly.
Oof.
All I know about them, Joe, is they're usually very positive.
Yeah.
People tend to go online and write nice things about you. That's what happens, isn't it?
Absolutely, Nathan.
It's my experience.
In the meantime, we'll make do with some tweets. So we've loads to talk about. We've been away for a few weeks, a few different things going on. There was a roadshow last week, which took some of our time, which is not very much about.
I haven't heard nothing.
Rory McIlroy, we're going to talk about Player of the Year now. We have Matt Kuchar doing his thing. We have the Solheim Cup. We're going to talk to Stephanie Meadow very shortly. She's going to give us the inside track as things get underway in Gleneagles. Your tweets, firstly. In no particular order. David O'Sullivan in touch to say, Rory said in an interview he's now a better player than in 2014 when he won two majors and a WGC. What do you think? And does he deserve PGA Tour Player of the Year? Interesting question. We'll come to it momentarily. Dan on Matt Kuchar, taking the rules into his own hands by removing little lumps of sand from around the ball. Caddy payment, match play with Garcia, the Memorial embedded ball fiasco, and now this. Root him out, says Ned the Chief. The Matt Kuchar thing, very strange. We talk about that now briefly?
It's hard to think of a run-of-the-mill sportsman who has destroyed his credibility to such an extent in such a short period of time for a variety of different reasons. All right, the superstars it happens to on a semi-regular basis, but Matt Kuchar was the most inoffensive man in the world.
Pretty
likeable.
Mm.
And it turns out he's an ass.
Well,
and a giant ass.
But he had a very good reputation until relatively recently. You know, I mean, people talk about him when he first popped on the scene, US amateur, his dad was caddying for him, a little bit overbearing. But generally, in so much as the general public knew from afar, he was just the aw shucks, golly gosh, fairly affable, perfectly inoffensive fella. And like in 2 years, he's just taken a hammer to his reputation.
Yeah, I think... certainly not aware of perceptions. I mean, there is obviously a massive difference between how he's perceived by people who don't know him and how he's perceived by people who do. And oftentimes the two don't marry. But as you said, those who didn't know, us fans who would have just been golf watchers, would have always had a fairly positive view of Kuchar, if indifferent. You know, he was one of the kind of more easygoing, likeable guys on tour.
Forgettable.
Yeah, but yeah. Not in a... Like, the Kuch thing was... It was kind of sweet. But as you said, the caddy one is awful PR. And this one, and to be careful, he's actually interpreting the rules in the loosest... pun very much intended, in the loosest sense of the term, because he's not breaking the rules.
No.
But the idea of all of a sudden, like, waste area is like you can remove any loose impediments. Sir, like, you could spend hours taking pebbles out.
For people who didn't realise that, because I suspect lots of people just saw the 20-second clip on Twitter and assumed he was in a bunker. Technically, he was not in a bunker. It was classed as a waste area, as you've said.
Mm.
So if you're in a waste area, technically, you're allowed to move loose impediments to improve the lie. And what Kuchar was doing was all around the ball, taking the tiniest impediments, like each grain of sand could have counted as an impediment.
Almost like someone would do with the finesse of an ice sculptor, just trying to make a sand-based tee that he could hit the ball.
Yes.
But there was a rules official there watching all of this.
Yeah.
So he didn't, again, technically, Matt Kuchar didn't do anything wrong. Mm. I would suspect, actually, and you're talking about public perception and private perception, PGA Tour professionals
would be a web
look at
play.
All of this and go, it's all fine.
This isn't his worst offence. It's just it's the latest in the litany.
What is his worst offence? Not talking to Andrew Coulthard that time?
Yes. Yes.
In hindsight, you
do
see,
you
we look at that.
Worse than not paying El Toucan?
Oh, sorry, El Toucan. Andrew Coulthard second.
Okay.
But again, that feeds into, so we used to look at that and go, he's probably been a bit quirky. That's kind of Kuch. Maybe he's just a bit different. He's trying to be funny. Mm. Or actually, now everything we know about Kuch, we look at that and go,
Yeah.
I always think in terms of pros who interpret the rules to suit themselves, and particularly who seem to exaggerate. Seve Ballesteros is the most beloved of European golfers. I've never met a golf fan in Europe who didn't idolise Seve, but, you know, of a certain age. Seve was swashbuckle, he was dashing, he was everything you wanted golf to be.
Mm.
But he was notorious for bending the rules, without breaking them, but for bending the rules to suit himself, always. And so he had that kind of winner at all costs. He was always going to, and in truth, he wasn't alone. Like, golfers tend to, you know, it's like golfers always get these amazing lies that we will never get on a Saturday four ball, ever. Like, you know, because they kind of go, yeah, but if I play it this way. And so you can see Kuchar's actions in the sand or in the waste area very much in that vein. Like, it's a tried and tested tradition. And as you say, Nathan, PGA pros will look and go, yeah, sure.
Mark Rowe was in commentary, and he, I think, almost added to the sense of the reaction. He said, well, he's going to have a perfect lie in a minute if he keeps going. So what he's doing here is treating them like they're all loose impediments. It'll be on a tee peg shortly.
Yeah.
Well, he's doing it very quickly, isn't he? Because what he's been told is he can move the bigger bits. But what he is doing is he is moving everything. So just get him a spade and he'll be fine.
Yeah. I mean,
that's a fellow pro looking on.
Yeah, but it's a fellow pro who works for TV, who's trying to make sure that he's saying something, you know, memorable on television. And that's fine. I'm not saying it's okay. Kuchar is breaking the spirit of the rules.
Yeah, but not the rules.
But not the rules. And, you know, and it's unedifying. Given the 18 months he's had or the 12 months he's had, it's like he'd have been just wiser. Just play the damn shot.
I know, it's like this is some kind of Joaquin Phoenix trick he's playing on everyone over the last
I want you all to hate
reveal
me.
Reveal himself in it and be like, this is going to be the greatest sports documentary of all time.
But somebody will probably sit down over the next 3 months with Matt Kuchar and look over the past year.
Mm.
And I'd be fascinated to see, does he just shrug his shoulders and say, I don't get what the big deal about any of this is.
Yeah.
Not, okay, perhaps unfairly to drag another golfer in. Do you think any of what Kuchar's done is in any way comparable to Sergio's behaviour over the last 12 months in Saudi Arabia, chucking the driver, whatever it was, a couple of months ago? I don't think so. I think Sergio's behaviour is way worse.
Yeah, Sergio's behaviour, though, has all been petulant, whereas Matt Kuchar's is more thought out. Sergio, what has Sergio done?
Lost his temper.
Tore up
lost
the greens.
Temper consistently.
Yeah, tore up the greens in Saudi Arabia. Absolutely, but he's a pro, what is he, 40?
Mm.
He's been around a long, long time.
Mm.
Like, if you haven't learned to control yourself or to mitigate disappointing play, there's something fundamentally wrong with you.
Yeah, I'm not defending Sergio, clearly.
No, I know you're not.
geez, it's much more palatable to say, well, that person just loses their temper and they feel horrible, I would suspect, afterwards. But Kuchar,
not horrible enough not to do it again.
I know. It's very hard to defend. But the L2 can thing, for instance,
yeah, it was shitty. It was terrible. Yeah, it was
that's
awful.
That's a thought out. This is how I think and I behave, kind of a thing.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, sorry.
I just think they're two totally different things. I think what Sergio did was pretty horrific when he ripped up the greens and has continued that over. So clearly, isn't learning his lesson. You'd have to assume at this stage is never going to learn his lesson. And there's certainly a bit in the coverage that we watch of it's easy to bash the American because they don't need him.
That's right.
Matt Kuchar.
They
don't need him for Ryder Cup interviews, for soft post round. They couldn't care less. So pop away.
I just think Sergio could have benefited from Roger Federer's coach. Roger Federer lost his temper all the time when he was a young player. And his coach took him to task and said, you can't do that. If you do, I won't coach you anymore. And, you know, 20 years of Federer being like incredibly well behaved. But you always imagine that lurk within Federer is that fire. That, you know, that if things aren't going his way, like toss a racket, or, you know. Anyway, I guess the broader point I'm saying is that I think, Nathan, you're dead right. I think they don't need Kuchar, so it's easier to bash him. I think there's the behaviour of other players might be as comparable. And anyway.
Concierge Golf said it was painful to watch. Peter Cosgrove, then, on the topic of slow play, there was once an event, because we were talking about this a couple of weeks ago, on the Challenge Tour where no practice swings were allowed. The sponsor hated slow play. I appreciate it totally messes with golf processes, but it would be great for the fans and maybe favour the natural golfer. You can't ban practice swings.
No. That's not the problem.
Can you restrict it to one practice swing?
I mean...
But practice swings aren't the problem in slow play. That's not an issue, you know.
Yeah.
It's the endless...
Talking,
the endless process, the closing your eyes, finding your way into the tunnel where you're, you know, all of that stuff.
The pre-shot routine.
It's the reading the green book. It's like reading Einstein's theory of relativity every time you get on a green. It's like, ooh.
Colin Casey, so a Players' Championship, Canadian Open, FedEx, Ferrari, do you think he swaps with Shane Lowry if he had a choice? I think that's a rhetorical question. Anto Hughes.
The answer is no.
What?
You think Rory would swap with Shane Lowry?
Absolutely.
No.
Oh, I thought he would as well.
No, I don't think so.
A FedEx...
Now, obviously, neither of us can, or any of us can verify this, but no.
But, you know, a FedEx, a Canadian, and the Players, you don't think he'd swap one of them to have another British Open?
Sorry. The way I understood the question, would I think that Rory would swap this year's accomplishments for winning the Open? No. I'd still think... No.
Jeez, I would have thought majors is all he's thinking about. Despite his protestations, I would have thought it's all about majors.
I could be totally wrong, but I know we're going to get to it, but I think Rory's had a terrific year.
I totally think he would, but I even think it'd be an interesting question. Would he swap the Players, the Canadian and the FedEx just to take the tee shot at Portrush again and no guarantees after that? I think he might even do that.
Whoa. Obviously.
I agree.
You do.
100%. And we'll get on to Player of the Year conversation.
Next.
In a few minutes, because I know Stephanie Meadows is going to come on shortly, but no.
Just now. Andrew Hughes, does this win some McIlroy up? That's the FedEx win. He played some unreal golf this year, faltered in all the majors. No one cares how many FedEx Cups you win at the end of the day. Has he more drive in him chasing the money rather than cementing his place in golfing history? Absolutely not. I don't think he's... No. I don't think he's playing better because the money's there. Absolutely not.
No, I think he was almost embarrassed by the... Well...
Yeah.
Yeah. It's easy to be embarrassed when you have the money in your bank account, I guess.
If anything, the fact that he messed up that T-shirt at Portrush so badly would suggest that was when he was at his most nervous. That's what meant the most to him, as opposed to the $15 million. Harry Diamond walking up that 18th. $1.5 million.
I know.
Goodness me.
Yep.
Tsunami hitting his bank account.
Oof. I think...
There's a question.
Here we go.
Which would Harry Diamond prefer?
Ooh.
100% the season that Rory
really
has had.
The way things went.
What do you think? He could never, obviously, clearly, Harry Diamond could never admit this. But would Harry Diamond prefer to have been standing alongside Rory McIlroy as he won the Open Championship at Royal Portrush, or to end the season with about $28 million?
Yeah, because he won.
So he gets $2.8 million.
$2.8 million. It's a hell of a question. I would still think a major. Just for how iconic it would be at Portrush. No? Interesting.
I suppose it all hinges on how and I use the word sentimental, but in the real sense, as opposed to the cheap throwaway sense, how sentimental McIlroy and Diamond would be.
Okay, there are your tweets. We are moving on. So the Solheim Cup, Gleneagles, 80,000 tickets sold. Fantastic, 80,000 tickets. This is the 16th edition of the Solheim Cup. We are joined on the line by Stephanie Meadow to give us the inside track. You there, Stephanie?
Hello, how are you?
Very well, thanks for joining us. I'm told you're up in Northern Ireland about to tee off very shortly.
I am, yeah. Another 20 minutes, I'm going to go play Port Rashlam. I haven't been here in a little while, so I'm excited to get out there and see it.
Just don't go wide left off the first. Rumour has it there's a bit of trouble out there.
Yeah, I was just looking at the first hole there a second ago. It's pretty far left. So.
It's very far left,
but I saw it both ways, I think, on the TV in the States when I was watching it. So no right, no left.
I was half wondering if they're going to put a plaque out there at the OB left to mark the moment, but that would be a bit cool. So, Solheim Cup getting underway at Gleneagles. Obviously, it was the scene of Paul McGinley's triumph a couple of years ago. This is always very much, far more so than the men's situation, billed as David versus Goliath. The European Tour always up against the Americans. How is this year shaping up?
I actually think that the Europeans have a great chance. You know, the Americans this year, they have a lot of rookies. I think it's six. But I think we have a lot of players who are very feisty. You know, I think they're probably really good in match play, and a lot of them have, you know, grown up like any other, you know, Solheim Cup. We've always played foursomes, and we kind of know those types of formats. So I guess part of it, I think, will depend on the weather. You know, I think the worse the weather, probably the more it benefits us. But I really do think, you know, we have a really good shot of pulling in the home win this year.
It's often a pretty tempestuous rivalry. How much heat is in it at the moment?
Sorry, say that again?
It's often a pretty fiery rivalry, the Solheim Cup. How much heat is there at the moment? How does 2019 shape up in that regard?
It seems like, I mean, I've watched some of the media interviews already, and they're firing kind of trash talk back and forth. And I know that a lot of the girls in the European Tour or the European side are really good friends, so I would expect that to kind of heighten all those sorts of things. And, you know, I think it's a fantastic event, and I'm thrilled to hear, you know, that there's so many people going, and I think they're going to love it.
Stephanie, I don't know if you got a chance to hear Danielle Kang, who was on a podcast and said, you're trying to take souls. You're there to make people cry at this point, to crush the other team.
Yeah.
That's the fun of it. Now, you get the feeling she's tapping into her inner Patrick Reed, you know, the kind of the happy villain that Patrick Reed played at Gleneagles 2 years ago. And then... Mm-hmm. You know, you're like, she's had her own struggles with her putting, etc. But like, how do you treat comments like that? Do you see them in the kind of the fun spirit, I guess, that they're intended, or is there something not quite sinister? But you know, how does Team Europe take that stuff on board?
I think it's definitely a big motivator. You know, to hear somebody say that about your team, you know, that they want to make you cry. I think nothing could kind of get you more riled up than that. You know, Danielle, I don't know her really that well, but, you know, she's very feisty and she is quite kind of sarcastic and dry, that kind of humour. So I'm sure she didn't mean, you know, as a super negative comment. But, you know, in there, she's super competitive, so she wants to win. And that's part of what makes her so good on the regular season as well. So, you know, I think for the European girls, you know, take it and swallow it and spit it back out at them, really.
All of this obviously comes back to the incident in 2015. For anyone that doesn't remember, it's the 17th hole of a four-ball match. Alison Lee and Brittany Lincecum on the American side, Charlie Hull and Suzanne Pedersen on the European side. Alison Lee has a putt that slides just past the hole. She thinks it's been given. She walks off. The officials think it's been given. Mm-hmm. And Suzanne Pedersen calls him back and says, I hadn't given that. There's a lot of tears, there's a lot of controversy, and it has continued to this day, clearly. You've obviously been on the LPGA Tour and around the LPGA Tour for recent years. Like, is it something that's forgotten about completely, that rivalry between Europe and USA on your regular weeks, and it just comes up once every 2 years for the Solheim Cup? Or did that create a little bit of a division between the Americans and the Europeans?
I think, honestly, you know, week in and week out, it's not really... It's a little present, but not not totally. You know, I think we're all out there to work and, you know, we're there to make, you know, as selfish as it sounds, but we are there to make money for ourselves and for our careers. So I think people are more focused on that mainly throughout the year. But then, you know, as the lead up comes, especially the year of, and then, you know, maybe 3 months before, you know, when people are starting to get picked and, you know, who's the selection going to be and stuff like that, you know, I think it gets a bit heightened again. So there's probably about 3 or 4 months prior to Solheim where I think it's that rivalry kind of kicks back up. I think overall that incident is probably mostly forgotten about. I'm sure for the actual players, it's not. It's always going to be in their mind, you know, if they're paired again or they're playing with the person in the regular season event. But overall, I think, you know, it's pretty nice out there. We're there to work and get our jobs done.
As for the play itself, 8 of the world's top 10 aren't there. We know how dominant Asian players are mm-hmm. in world golf at the moment. The average ranking of the US team is 27. The European average ranking is 105 because Suzanne Pedersen at 6.35 skews that ever so slightly. Give us a sense of the real leaders mm-hmm. in each team and how they shape up and maybe how Europe, you know, how you think Europe are going to take on the US. You said that you thought they had a good chance.
You know, I think Suzanne, she's one of those players that she's going to perform when she has to. Like, she's been there so many times, and I actually had the opportunity to play with her in Canada just 2 weeks ago, really. And she hit the ball really, really well and just didn't make any putts. So she gets the putter going. She's definitely going to be tough to beat in that sort of environment with a home crowd behind her. But then you got to look at, you know, the U.S. team. They got some really strong players. You know, Lexi and Angel Yin are two huge bombers. So, you know, they'll be tough to beat. You know, it'll be interesting to see the pairings when they come out tonight of how they're going to format that. You know, Ally McDonald, she's kind of in that situation where she wasn't picked and now she's on the team because Stacey withdrew. So there's just a lot of things, I think, that are going on that could kind of make them a little uneasy. But, you know, on the Europe side, Bronte Law, super feisty again. Like, she's a great match player. I've known her for years. So I expect her to probably have a fabulous debut.
Looking at ladies' golf in Europe at the moment, it's clearly not in a good place. The LET has been struggling in recent years. There's a lot of talk again mm-hmm. of maybe the European Tour taking over. There's not a huge amount of tournaments. It's probably most emphasised here in Ireland, where there was such momentum around the time of the Solheim Cup, and they were getting huge crowds down to the Ladies' Irish Open at Killincastle, and then it built up to the Solheim Cup, and they never capitalised on that, and there hasn't been an Irish Open since. I guess it makes it more difficult for that camaraderie to be there in the European team when most of them are playing their golf over in America all the time, that they're not coming through a system here. A lot of them are probably following a similar path to yourself, going to college in America and staying mm-hmm. over there. And like, I don't know how close you're following what's in Europe going on in the LET at the moment. Like, where do you see it going over the next little while?
Yeah, it's really tough. I mean, you think about it, you know, any of the girls that are good on the LET, they're just planning on stepping stoning over to the LPGA for the most part. There's a few that aren't willing to do that or don't have any interest in doing that. But for the most part, people want to move on and go to the bigger purses and the bigger stage. And, you know, I just don't know if there's enough room for there to be an LPGA tour and a really, really strong European tour as well. It'll be very interesting to see how it goes in the next, you know, 2-3 years. You know, I genuinely feel for a lot of the girls on the European Tour because there's some really great players out there, and they've, you know, obviously been struggling very much to get any tournaments even to play in, you know, with gaps of 2 months in the middle of the summer and things like that. So it's extremely tough, but, you know, I hope that, I mean, I personally, I think it would be great to have the European Tour maybe even give spots to the LPGA so that maybe some Americans will come over and play on the European Tour, you know, and kind of try to get people from other countries, you know, maybe even Koreans would come over or try to fill up the tournaments that way and get some more money involved in it. But, you know, I wish it could be as strong as the men's tour, but men's European Tour, but I'm just not sure it's going to happen.
I know Jay Monahan, the PGA Tour Commissioner, was talking recently again about possible co-sanctioned events between the LPGA and the PGA mm-hmm. Tour. It's something you now have experience of because there was one here in Northern Ireland just a few weeks ago, which you won, and which was a huge event and a huge success, it seems, as well. There were big crowds. I know Niall Horan's management company were very much behind it. How did that week actually work out?
Oh, it's fabulous. You know, it ran really smoothly. There was a lot of people there, obviously, you know, with the men and the women. And, but it was two separate golf courses, so it actually felt not so jam-packed. But, you know, I think they put a lot of money into grandstands, and a lot of people came out to watch and really supported it. And everybody that I talked to really enjoyed the format of, you know, okay, I get to watch the guys for one group, and then I just sit here, and then the girls come through, and you get to see something kind of totally different. And I really do think that's going to be the future. And I think it's great for women's golf as well. So, I mean, I was thrilled with how it went. I couldn't have been happier to win at home. I had so many people there that I hadn't seen in years that came out to support me. And, you know, having that home crowd, there's nothing quite like it. And, I, you know, walking down 18, I just kept saying to myself, like, I want to do it for everybody else and all these people that are here for me. And I really think that, you know, that helped me get the job done. So I'm very thankful for everybody that came out.
You've been battling hard for your LPGA Tour card over the last few weeks. Where do you stand right now? Mm-hmm. What's the plan for the rest of the year?
Yeah, I'm 110 on the money list at the minute, and I have to be top 100. So I've got a little bit of work to do, but I've been playing really nicely the last, you know, 5-6 weeks, maybe in a little longer than that. But, you know, I think just keep flying away. It only takes 1 week to really make a huge jump, just with how the purses are. You know, they're top heavy. So hopefully I'll have a nice week of good golf prep here at Portrushen in Ireland this week, and I'll go back over there thinking that it's easy peasy because there's no wind.
Great. Well, listen, we don't want to keep you from your tea time. What club selection are you taking on the first in a few moments?
Oh, I think I'm just going to bomb driver.
Right-hand side of the fairway.
The deal, yeah.
Stephanie, thanks so much. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Cheers. Stephanie Meadow there, taking a call. Very good of her to do so. So, Solheim Cup. I mean, I saw a few pieces, one in The Guardian, where I had those stats about the 8 of the world's top 10 not there. This was, I think, Ewan Murray. Mm. Neither will 14 of the top 20 be there. Neither will 22 of the top 30, 27 of the top 40, or 32 of the top 50. Maybe that's the best kind of summary of the thing. But the event is always just so kind of compelling anyway. It gets fiery as hell, and it's a brilliant spectacle. Yeah. Killeen Castle, it was brilliant a couple of years ago. Yeah, it was fantastic.
Oh, it was way in 2011.
Yeah.
I loved it.
Yeah.
Mm. Even in the pouring rain, it was fantastic.
Yeah, yeah. Gleneagles, we were there for 2014, McGinley's Triumph. I don't remember much about the course. It's well regarded, I presume.
Yeah. There's the two courses. What was the one? Is it the stadium course? Or no, the...
Centenary course?
The centenary course, that's the one.
I am trying to think back to the memorable moments.
Jamie it's hard Donaldson. To enjoy it when you're sitting in comfortable in the media centre, lads.
We were out walking about as well.
What? To go to the food cart.
Wow. What's the signature hole from memory?
Uh-huh.
There you go. That's not to say it's not a good golf course, but...
It will be interesting to see where the Solheim Cup goes, though. Now, maybe the marketing and the history is there, that it can sustain it despite what's going on in the European Tour. But obviously, if the Americans go and win it for the third straight time, and if they were to win convincingly, like, they can turn around to the Europeans and go, your house isn't in order here.
Yeah, because they had won 3 on the bounce before Killeen Castle, and that stopped the rot. But you just can't have it once every... No. 4 or 5 times that they managed to nick one.
I mean, it's the point you made, isn't it? The LET is in big trouble. I mean, if the European Tour is in trouble, and it is, I mean, it's in incredibly rude health compared to the LET.
Well, they don't have any tournaments.
Yeah.
They've been going weeks, and as Stephanie said, months without any tournaments at all. Mm. And tournaments are sort of penciled in, and then you hear they're cancelled, and in the middle of summer, in the height of summer. Like, the Solheim Cup is proven, and particularly here in Ireland, and it's a crying shame, and people should probably look as to why they didn't take advantage of the interest levels that were there.
Mm.
Like, there was a huge marketing budget put behind it. I remember that. Like, it was pushed
to
within an inch of its life. But they got the crowds, even for the Irish Opens. Was the Irish Open for Killeen Castle for 3 years before the Solheim Cup to sort of get people used to the course? And also, they got a lot of the American players over. And I think, like, the winners list was incredible. Yeah. Sam Pedersen won it the last year. But there's clearly an appetite there in Ireland that they will go and watch a ladies' European Tour event.
80,000 tickets sold. That's really
it's
good.
It's great, yeah.
It's amazing.
It's brilliant. So that's on over the weekend. That is the Solheim Cup. We'll talk about it next week and see how it goes. Golf Weekly is brought to you, we're very happy to say, by La Cala, Spain's largest golf resort. It's Irish-owned as well, FBD Hotels and Resorts. FBD Hotels and Resorts include 3 18-hole golf courses, Europe, Asia and America, and a six-hole par three as well. Rory McIlroy. He was in conversation with Jack Nicklaus. This went out in various places, and Nicklaus popped down the Player of the Year trophy, and McIlroy, whatever conversation they'd been having about his career, it seemed natural enough thing to happen from McIlroy's point of view. And he was like, oh, you have two of them. And Nicklaus said, no, you've three now. And he's,
it was quite a nice moment.
It was
wasn't
nice.
It? Yeah, I thought it was nice.
And he was like, geez, I've got goosebumps.
Yeah.
And it was a really nice, genuine reaction. So McIlroy has been voted by his fellow players PGA Tour Player of the Year. Brooks Koepka looked over the shoulder, looked at that new chip and said, you'll do very, very nicely for 2020. Yeah. Discuss, Rory McIlroy, who was the best player? Who was the best player of 2019?
Statistically, Rory McIlroy.
Just who was the best player of 2019?
Rory McIlroy. Strokes gained, had the fourth best round since 2000, fourth best season since 2005. The top three are all held by Tiger Woods. He won the Players, the Canadian Tour Championship, and I realised that Koepka also won three, including the PGA. But consistently over the course of those, if you're going to judge a season by how well you do in the majors, then obviously Koepka, because he finished ahead of Rory in all four. Yeah. But if you're going to judge a season based on performance across all of the events of that season, Rory McIlroy had a better year. That would be my argument. Now, which isn't to say that there isn't a huge argument to be made in favour of Koepka. And it's the reason why we're talking about it is it's actually quite surprising that the award was given to Rory McIlroy. Mm. So that's the first thing. Now, I mean, I know we'll get into the weeds a little bit on this. It's the PGA Tour Player of the Year.
Yeah.
The majors aren't part of the PGA Tour. Well, one of them is, but... in PGA Tour events, Rory McIlroy just played better. And, you know, whether Koepka wasn't interested, interest probably a bit strong, but he wasn't as committed to performing in the regular PGA Tour events as he was in the majors, perhaps, was one of the reasons why the other players felt, well, you didn't really deserve it.
It's obviously something of a popularity contest as well. It's not done on raw figures. It's not like the Vardon Trophy for lowest scoring average. And maybe Rory is incredibly popular and clearly is very popular amongst his fellow players. And maybe, as you say, Brooks Koepka's attitude to your regular PGA Tour events twisted some heads and thought, you know, he doesn't deserve this award. All right, he's an outstanding season. I don't think there's any question, though, that Brooks Koepka is the player of the year.
Mm-hmm. Is this because of his performance in the majors?
He won three times. Mm. The exact same as Rory McIlroy. For players of this caliber, two things matter: winning tournaments and winning majors. Mm. They've won the same amount of tournaments, and Koepka's won a major and had an unbelievable season in the majors. Finished top 10, top 5.
He's become
in all four majors.
The fifth player in history, when you think about that, like golf history, fifth player in history to finish in the top 5 at all four majors in a single season.
Yeah, so conversely, the best finish that McIlroy had was tied 8th. In the PGA Championship. He was a combined 21 strokes worse than Koepka in the three majors that he did make the cut in. So there is absolutely no comparison between Rory's performances in the majors and Koepka's. And, like, again, so the problem is with determining the Player of the Year, it's actually strangely hard, because if you were to look at one set of parameters, strokes gained average, which is, you know, whether you believe it or not, but it is a good metric of how you performed tournament to tournament. Mm. And McIlroy had a brilliant, brilliant year. Mm. But as Nathan said, like, for the PGA players of that calibre, it's wins and wins in majors. And
let me put it to you this way. What if McIlroy had the most ridiculous PGA Tour season where he won 10 times, obnoxious, and Brooks Koepka won all four majors?
Brooks Koepka all the way.
I mean,
2008.
Sure, that's a good.
Well, is this that?
Yeah, no.
Really?
It's listen. It's a good point.
It comes down to how much weight in you put in the majors. Clearly, and we've said that McIlroy has tried to emphasize recently. I've heard him on his podcast a few times saying, you know, we're all just so obsessed with the majors, and, you know,
including me.
People need to realize there's more to life.
Mm. I mean, there's
like
not
the
much more
Open,
to life
guys.
than Augusta, which I talk about all the time. No.
So he won the Players' Championship, and there's all sorts of conspiracy theories, I think, out there that the PGA Tour are trying to build up the Players' Championship again into that fifth major and give it a little bit more credibility, and that almost they're trying to separate themselves from the majors in a way. Like, the Players' Championship is the deepest field in golf.
It's got the best field.
But the first hole at Portrush, you cannot get away from that.
Yeah.
That was the pressure on McIlroy. There was, and he can talk up the players all he wants. Do you feel the same heading down the back nine of Sawgrass as you do the back nine of any other major? And strokes gained. We know that Brooks Koepka sort of approaches the season slightly different to everybody else. He's not sitting down going, you know what, I'm fourth in strokes gained. Ooh, maybe I should go out this week and play a little bit better. He's thinking is fine-tuning for 4 weeks of the year, because all anyone will talk about, and it's a good debate, obviously, to have. Nobody ultimately cares who wins the PGA Tour Player of the Season. It's a nice trophy. Mm. But
yeah, I agree.
Ultimately, all that anyone cares about are the four majors. But so Rory won the Canadian Open. Who won the Canadian Open last year?
I don't know.
Exactly, because nobody cares.
But here's
Dustin
Johnson. Dustin Johnson won it last year.
Yeah.
Okay.
But,
memorable. Okay. So here's. I don't actually disagree with anything
actually,
you said.
I don't think anyone actually disagrees with. We can both accept that Rory and Koepka have had
very good years. So Rory's tee ball on one at Portrush.
I love that you call it a tee ball.
It becomes kind of
a tee shot. No,
I don't know. I'm just
American. You're a global guy.
Exactly. So that shot obviously becomes the marker of the year for Rory.
It's the most memorable moment of the year? Is it?
Yeah, for us, for sure. Not maybe for American viewers, but...
No, I think...
No.
It is...
No.
Without question...
Are you telling me that Tiger's putt on 18 at Augusta
is
the most memorable moment of the year by
Tiger.
A billion
okay,
miles?
Obviously Tiger, yes.
Okay, no, no.
Shane Lowry walking down 18 was brilliant.
Yeah.
But I think the most shocking moment of the year was...
The moment that made you go...
Yeah.
Tiger probably still...
Let me throw something in. Brooks Koepka going into water on 12 at Augusta. Like, he basically handed the major away, or whatever chance he had. Mm. And given the way Koepka plays, the way he dominates majors at the moment for the last 2 years, like, you would have been putting good odds on Koepka really not being intimidated by Tiger Woods going down the stretch. And the Tiger, given that he played kind of decent par golf, that Koepka would... Like,
just
Koepka
to defend him there, because Molinari, a brilliant ball striker, also went in the water... Mm. There was something with that wind.
Sure, absolutely.
And look at the way Koepka rebounded.
Yeah.
He's back with an eagle.
That's right. Mm.
So,
but I...
You know, he didn't wilt. He finished second at the Masters.
I was reading, was it... Shane Ryan had a big Twitter thread, and it was really, really interesting, where he's talking about 2014. Do you remember Rory's great shot on the 14th, or was it the 10th? The par 5 10th, where he hits this... he hits this cut shot, this like 200 or 80 yard cut shot onto
which
the green.
Course?
Was it the PGA Championship? In the PGA Championship. And then afterwards goes, I hit the wrong shot. I was trying to hit a draw and he hit a cut. And Shane Ryan's saying, like, it wasn't a good shot because it wasn't the shot. So luck plays this huge part. So a season defining moment goes down to just dumb luck. You know, so Rory at Portrush, it wasn't the worst shot you've ever seen. You've hit Tiger Woods, hit him. It went barely out of bounds.
But
so I'm saying
I agree with all of that.
Yeah.
But everything Rory has said since is that that shot doesn't happen at any other tournament because he has admitted himself, he stepped up in the tee, he felt unlike he's ever felt before, which means that that tournament was more important. He didn't feel that way at the Canadian Open. He had, obviously, maybe not quite as extreme, but difficulties at the Masters in terms of coping. These are the tournaments he puts all the pressure on. And unfortunately for McIlroy, this year, these are the tournaments he has struggled in, that he hasn't competed in. There's no question, when the pressure's off, McIlroy is the most gifted player out there right now. Mm. When, I don't want to say it doesn't matter when it's a tour championship and there's 15 million on the line, but I still think
one
major... Again, it's the Shane Lowry argument. Would he swap his season for Koepka's season? Nearly wins as much money and has an extra major.
There's also the issue of recency bias, so that the ballots go out the day after
the FedEx.
And so I can't remember who it was, maybe it was Jason Sobel or one of those guys, but made the point of, like, when the players are filling in the ballot, they're not sitting there, oh, hermetically sealed room, it's just me.
They're not this conversation.
No, but they are. They're having that conversation with their wives, or they're sitting there going, what do you think, Koepka? Like, he's a bit of a... Meh. And, like, I didn't like the way Koepka criticised guys for slow play. You know what? To hell with that guy.
Possibly, yeah.
And also, as well, as I said, the recency bias is that Rory won... He won the night before, so he's like fresh in everybody's mind. He beats Koepka, so maybe there's an element of that, you know.
Rex Huggard included a conversation from 2008 with Tiger Woods.
Oh my goodness!
In
his piece, what did he say?
Question from Rex: did you vote for Paddy for Player of the Year, Harrington?
Harrington.
Tiger. Rogers. I did actually. Why? He won two. Is that all it comes down to? Yeah.
Tiger Woods said this.
Yeah.
And so...
Is that all it comes down to, Tiger? Yeah.
And yet Tiger Woods takes
about
great...
the majors.
But he takes great pride in being like winning 80 tour events.
Yeah, sure. No, look, that's a very legitimate point. But golf can't play this two ways. You know, golf is about the majors. We talk about every great player in terms of how many majors they've won.
It's true.
How many tournaments?
Believe me, when I'm making the for Rory McIlroy argument, I'm very, very aware of it, and I agree with it. So, in a sense, there's a bit of cognitive dissonance going on. But
I don't even think it's an argument. I can't believe McIlroy's one player of the year. When McIlroy retires, what's it going to say before his name?
Three FedEx championships.
Yeah.
Well, I think.
Well, if we're talking about, if you were talking about the player of the last decade, I assume Dustin Johnson has won more PGA Tour events than anybody over the last 10 years. Is he in that conversation?
No.
Because it's Rory, Koepka...
Spieth.
And possibly Spieth.
Yes.
He's won four majors.
But doesn't have... What? Rory also has four.
Spieth is three, no?
Four.
Go on.
Two Masters.
No.
British Open.
Doesn't have two Masters.
He does have two Masters.
No, one Masters.
I mean, he should have had four Masters. I think he only has one.
I thought he was a four-time
major. No, he's a three-major winner.
Oh, is it him and him and Rory are going for the career Grand Slam? Sorry, yeah.
And come here, how many PGA tournaments has Jordan Spieth?
This is 20-something.
Yeah. How many has McIlroy won?
16, is it?
17.
No.
World Championship was 17, was it? Must have been.
I understand all of that. I'm saying is that Rory, with two major disappointments, I mean, both... figuratively and literally, two major disappointments, has had this stellar year. And is it deserving of Player of the Year? Well, here's another point.
Yeah.
Why is golf the only American sport where the Player of the Year ballot, which goes out to all their peers, is not made public? It's the only game.
Where does Matt Kuchar got a vote?
He voted for himself.
And Xander Schauffele.
I hear you. Well, look, Xander had a good old run.
He did have a good
old run. But even still, you sit there going...
I don't know how someone thought Brooks Koepka. Yeah, yeah.
The last player to win the PGA Player of the Year without winning a major?
Tiger Woods. Because he won six times.
Five times. 2013? Five.
Yeah. Was it 2013? Yeah.
Fair enough. Who did? And I presume no one won two majors in 2013.
No. Phil Mickelson won the Open, though.
Yeah?
Yeah, but Tiger Woods won five times, and he's the greatest player of all time, so, you know... It's a safe bet giving him.
Are you sticking with your McIlroy Player of the Year?
Yeah, I mean, I'm sticking with it.
You're not feeling as good about it, though.
No, when I was thinking about it this morning,
yeah.
I'll go with McIlroy because he's deserving, but with the massive caveat that's sure. If they gave it to Koepka, I don't think we'd be like, oh yeah, he was a given, wasn't he?
I just think Koepka has been absolutely screwed here. Screwed.
Well. You said it. If the other players are voting for it, it is a popularity contest when it's that close. When it's that close. They've both won the same amount of tournaments.
Yeah.
You can weigh which the importance of each. But it comes down to a popularity contest. Maybe players like McIlroy more. And when it comes down to it, they go, you know what, like, McIlroy.
I think it shows the level that both of them are at. That I would imagine... both of them are pretty disappointed with a lot of their seasons.
Actually, good point.
Rory obviously has to be disappointed with the majors. And Koepka, even though he won one, when you have that level of consistency, like both the PGA and the Open Championship, like his putting, let him down massively. I also think we can look at Rory's year differently if he goes and follows it up next year. contends at the Masters, wins a major, you go, all right, you know what? Yeah. That was a stellar year that showed he turned things around and he was very much back on track.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, even though the new season is starting right now, it doesn't really start for another 6 months.
No, it doesn't.
I sort of retract my Koepka was screwed comment because that implies there's an outrage. And McIlroy was brilliant and consistently brilliant. It's just, I do think golf is about the majors and we can tell ourselves
Koepka
more and more.
More and more. It's worth them because we weren't on air since. McIlroy's performance in the FedEx finale was quite brilliant. Mm. You know, it really was.
In the way that Koepka beat him up the month before, he beat the tar out of Koepka.
Well, Memphis was a really dark day for McIlroy with him at WGC. But this was like a copper fastening of all his worst fears combined. Yeah. And interestingly, he came out after he won the FedEx in such brilliant fashion. Clutch putts, key moments, everything. And he said, well, I tried the previous month to treat the Sunday as if it was just another day. It's a Thursday. You know, I just go out and play my best stuff. Whereas fast forward a month, I was like, this is different. And it was noticeable in the commentary. They were like, I'm not sure these two have spoken. You know, this is tunnel vision. This isn't we're out for a good time. And it was brilliant to see McIlroy with that attitude.
Yeah.
He played incredibly well. If that's a sign of things to come, because he would have felt huge pressure that day. I know it wasn't a major, but I think because of the pairing with Koepka, he must have felt massive pressure, massive scrutiny, a sense of foreboding if this thing goes badly again, what everyone's going to say. And under that pressure, which was very real, under that pressure, he really delivered. So that does bode well for next year.
Because, as you said, it's the guy who... So Rory McIlroy is looking at a guy across from him going, well, he's not intimidated by my driving length. Doesn't bother him at all. In fact, he'd probably go longer than me if he wanted. He beat me up at WGC in Memphis. And he's been dominating the majors that I so desperately want to win for the last two and a half years. And so, and Rory's also coming from five shots back of Justin Thomas at the FedEx. So all of those things cumulatively, plus that as brilliant a player as Koepka unquestionably is, and none of this is takes away from any of Koepka's brilliance, but Rory McIlroy's shot-making ability supersedes them all.
Like, he's the most enjoyable player to watch.
He's just, and so I think that's exactly right. So his performance at the FedEx, as kind of ugly as $50 million is, and it's all about, it doesn't take away from the fact that under extreme pressure, and it really, I mean, we've said it before, haven't we? Is that, well, I've said it for sure, is that something troubles me about McIlroy under the kind of acute pressure of Augusta or Port Rush. He wilts. I mean, he just, and yet under this incredible pressure, he was like, no. Not only that, but I'm going to shine.
Speaking of Augusta, he was being interviewed about the Player of the Year award, and naturally, what month are we in? September.
Oh my God.
Guess what he's ending up talking about. Here it is.
I feel after a season like I've had, I'm more ready than ever to go and try to win it and claim it. And you know, every year that you go back there, you get more and more comfortable. And hopefully next year is the year. But you know, I feel I'm confident enough in my game that I'll have a good chance next year.
Rinse, wash, repeat.
6.5 months
of saying that
until the Masters starts. The refreshing thing was, it's what McGinley always talks about the elbows out for McIlroy. It was, you know what, this is a bit of a scrap. I am a fighter. Mm. I'm going to go and take you on. From his last major victory as the sun is setting with Mickelson and Ricky Fowler to, what was that tournament he played with Graham McDowell? Where he didn't speak to McDowell for the entire final round and McDowell was kind of going, whoa, what's just happened there? That's what you want to see.
Yeah.
Don't be the nice guy. Everyone thinks he's a great guy. He clearly is. Mm. You can be bold. Mm. When you get what happened on 18 when he beat Brooks Koepka, both of them had a smile on their face.
Sure.
They shook hands.
Sure.
And actually, I thought that was the one thing, and in hindsight, it didn't matter because McIlroy looked devastated in Memphis that time when Koepka beat him. Actually, Koepka seemed to take it
pretty well.
Pretty well.
Yeah.
Kind of went, all right, we got something going on here.
Because they've won a major.
And I've got the Player of the Year crown coming my way in just a few weeks. Boom.
Yeah. I think even McIlroy said after the fact, Koepka's won the Player of the Year.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it would be churlish of him to go, yeah, I think I should win.
I have a chance.
I think I put a question in the minds of the players.
Now, Nathan, contain your excitement. The season starts. The Greenbrier Classic gets underway. This one's a very famous tournament, but its position in the calendar not so good now. Bryson DeChambeau is the leading light. And after that, it's like Victor Hovland is second favourite for this tournament.
Hey, Rookie of the Year.
I know, but he's second favourite for this tournament. Mark Leishman's there. Bubba Watson's playing. Kevin Na. I guess we got the President's Cup on the way. So the Greenbrier Classic back on our TV screens. I am delighted.
We have Wentworth next week, isn't it?
Yeah.
so obviously won the showpiece of the European Tour. This is the big problem for the PGA Tour and for golf in general. So the football season has started. There isn't, I would say...
The NFL.
Yeah. Which is why they brought forward the playoffs. But the football season, I'm fairly sure the first real tournament on the PGA Tour that I would be properly interested in is Torrey Pines, which is the week of the Super Bowl. So we basically have...
Do not say that about...
I do love Hawaii.
Yeah. But now you're battling.
I'm thinking even... So like, there's people like us who love Hawaii, but your general golf fan, I think, will wait until Torrey Pines. That'll be the first time. Great golf course. You probably have seven of the world's top 10.
Tiger will be there.
All playing together. Tiger will be there. It'll be somewhat warm.
Mm. Tiger after he'll be in a fourth better position. Knee surgery on the left knee.
But like, we've got... That's 4 months away. 4.5 months away of just...
It's going to be some great content
in the world.
Coming your way on Golf Weekly.
Top there. Dead.
Yeah.
You might actually do some work.
Yeah. Walker Cup, worth a mention. This followed a familiar pattern.
Yeah. America won easily. They were relatively
courtesy
even.
Courtesy of the singles, though.
Yeah, yeah. That's what I'm saying. Relatively even in the team events, and then just battered them in the singles. This is the first time the USA has won on foreign soil since Port Marnock 1991.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Yep.
Bill Mickelson, he was there in 91.
And Harrington.
Yeah, so hang on a second. In 91, you had... Yeah, that's right. I can't remember who it was. But in 2007... Crosby's side is the first US team since the 2007 Walker Cup team that included Dustin Johnson, Ricky Fowler, Billy Horschel, Webb Simpson and Cain Stanley. I tell a lie, it's 2007. Before that was 91.
That's the Royal Kent Down team.
The famous RCD one.
That must be the best US team, or right up there.
Of all time, because every one of them went on.
Bar two.
So I tell a lie. Sorry, it wasn't 91 before that. But here's the thing.
The last 2 minutes have not been good for me.
They have not been good for me.
Yeah.
Or for this pod, or indeed for the listeners.
Usually just edit this out and it never happens.
Yeah, I can't edit that, my friend.
Sorry. But so I have here the list.
Don't even shout the usual curse words that you
from
shout
the USA,
that you can definitely
that's
delete.
True. Yeah. From the USA squad, okay?
From when? What are we talking about now?
Now.
Let's have a little reset here. That's just...
Right, internal edit.
So they won easily in the singles.
Yeah.
It's the first time since 2007 that a US team has won on foreign soil. And before that was Port Marnock 91.
Would that be the RCD team in 07?
Yes, it was. The famous RCD team.
Harrington and Mickelson in 91.
In 91. But in 2007, it was Dustin Johnson, Fowler, Horschel, Webb Simpson, Kyle Stanley.
And Rory McIlroy looking on.
Looking on. From this team, the winning Walker Cup team, the following USA players have either... turn pro or have indicated a willingness to turn pro. Akshay Bhatia, Brandon Wu, who we know, Stephen Fisk, never heard of, Alex Smalley and Isaiah Celinda. These are all players that I'm assuming we're going to see get invites onto the PGA Tour next year.
I presume so.
How do you keep getting these great names?
Golf does have a certain penchant for interesting names.
It does, yeah. Tiger Woods, which is perhaps the greatest golf name ever.
Oh dear. Why is that funny like 20 years after we first heard it?
Eldrick Woods.
Sure is. I mean, that was a good move.
Yeah.
Hell of a move.
Yeah.
Eldrick Woods. We gotta go.
I know. Can I just say quickly, because this is the preview of this season, but also the look back on last season, by far and away, counting Shane Lowry's walk up 18, counting Rory trying to make it back on the second day of Portrush, Tiger Woods winning the Masters is my favourite moment in golf of the last 5 years.
Don't worry, Fionn. We're going to do at least 6 look backs on the year in December.
Because we have. Okay,
between now and December. Right. Every week. Okay, you can pick a different one every week.
Fine.
So, Golf Weekly, listen, we're very happy to say, brought to you by La Cala, Spain's largest golf resort. Irish owned by FBD Hotels and Resorts. FBD Hotels and Resorts La Cala, located near Mijas.
Just ask the taxi driver to bring you Mijas.
Mijas. And houses a state-of-the-art spa and a 107-bedroom hotel. And next week, we're going to bring you, hopefully, a Golf Weekly. And also, we were at Adair Manor back on the longest day of the year, 21st of June. My God.
Summer solstice.
So we recorded a chat right out, straight after off the course, where we were buzzing about life. So we're going to bring you our Adair Manor review. Next week, if you're thinking about playing, should I play, should I not play? And that's on the way. Fionn, good to have you in studio.
Thanks, guys.
Nathan Murphy, thanks as ever.
Cheers.
All right, we're done.